Money Psychology. Money Psychology.
Every time you swipe a card or even peek at your balance, it's not just numbers. You're bumping into every money lesson you absorbed before you could name it. I keep hearing that in my head today. And quick aside for context, I'm Elliot Graves. Okay, back with you. Does that land for you the way it does for me? Yeah, it does. Let me check I'm hearing you. You're pointing at that weird moment when you buy something sweet for yourself and boom, guilt shows up like you broke a rule. Exactly. A treat, not a need. And instead of joy, there's a knot in your stomach. That feeling is what I want us to open up today. Because it's personal for me. I grew up with a fierce waste-not-want-not script. And even now, a little self-spending can poke that old bruise. You get what I'm saying, right? I do. And from a behavioral angle, I see it all the time. Can we bring in Emma? She's a philanthropist, gives generously, yet buying something just for herself makes her feel awful. It is. Money decisions look rational on a spreadsheet, but the drivers are emotional. Let's name what's happening under that guilt. Before we go there, I want to separate two things people mash together. Guilt and shame are twins. How do you draw that line? Guilt says, I did a wrong thing. As in, I spent $500 on a coat I didn't need. It targets the action. Behavior focused. Got it. Shame says, I am wrong. Not, I bought a coat, but wanting that coat means I'm shallow and wasteful. It attacks identity. Heavier. Like a weight on the chest. And you can make amends for an action, return the coat, rebalance the budget next month, but how do you make amends for who you think you are? You can't. That's the loop. With Emma, it isn't just, I shouldn't have bought this. It's I'm the kind of person who takes when others need. And that story sticks, even while she's actively serving those needs. Which is the part that makes no sense logically. Her giving proves she's not selfish, but shame doesn't respond to logic. It's a conviction. I don't deserve care. And culture amplifies it. We carry these clashing stories, celebrate success, side-eye enjoyment. There's this quiet rule that good people should practice constant self-denial. Listen to our language. We call something a guilty pleasure. Why does enjoyment need an apology stapled to it? We pre-shame ourselves to manage imagined judgment. It becomes a performance. Don't worry, I know I'm being naughty. Then the performance sinks inward until you can't have a simple pleasure without an inner scolding. And underneath it, is deserving. This moving target of, have I struggled enough to earn dinner out or a vacation? There's no finish line, just an invisible referee changing the rules mid-game. For someone with great wealth in a world with great need, it can morph into a kind of wealth survivor's guilt. Why me? And then any spending beyond basics feels like a betrayal. So giving becomes not only generosity, but almost a continuous apology, an attempt to settle a score that lives inside. Right. And those inner scales never stay balanced. Meanwhile, the culture sells whiplash. One minute, treat yourself, you earned it. And the next, hustle harder, own less, prove your discipline. So you're sold the craving and then offered the cure. You want the thing, then feel bad for wanting it. Then pay to fix the wanting. Okay, how do we start loosening this? If your nervous system learned joy is suspect, where do you even begin? I'm jumping in because I've been waiting to say this. Separate deed from identity. Buying a sweater isn't a moral verdict. That gap is hard to build if you fuse the two for years. But it's the hinge. And language helps build the hinge. Swap but for and. I bought this and I'm also someone who saves. The and stops the tug of war. Integration instead of cancellation. I enjoy a good meal and I give to causes I care about. Which expands self-definition. You're not a spender or a saver caricature. You're complex. Allowing that is an act of self-kindness. And that kindness is the medicine, not a debate, a gentler stance toward the part of you that learned, be good by depriving yourself. That part was protecting you. Exactly. You can thank it, then update the rulebook. Your well-being and joy count too. Practically, when guilt flares after a purchase, don't collapse into it. Study it. Oh, that old storyline is here. Curiosity or condemnation? Observe rather than obey. In the space between the feeling and the reflex, freedom shows up, maybe to make a different choice or to feel different about the same choice. Wait. Oh, yeah, intentionality. That's my center of gravity here. The issue isn't spending, it's the unseen conflict underneath the spending. And mine is permission, the deep inner green light to receive enjoyment, not as a prize for suffering, just because you're human. I keep saying that like I'm certain, and I want to flag I'm still practicing it too. And there are folks who study moral psychology who know this terrain better than I do. I'm staying humble here. Still, our two angles meet in the same place. A life where money supports security, generosity, and, without the sting, pleasure. No constant static of self-reproach humming in the background. Not about becoming a pleasure chaser. About becoming whole. That's the aim. When a money move surprises you, an impulse buy or an overcautious investment, I ask clients to pause and ask, whose voice am I hearing? And what early memory might be steering this? Understanding your money psychology won't magically perfect your choices, but it's the first step toward making them from today's reality instead of yesterday's fears.